Our study continues in the 8th chapter of Judges. We're beginning in the 18th verse. Gideon has just dealt out punishment to the two cities that did not give his men hospitality, Succoth and Penuel. And it seems that judgment did begin at the house of God with these two cities. They were severely chastened for their deeds, which we studied about in the last lesson. But judgment doesn't stop at the house of God. He goes on now in this 18th verse and passes judgment on these two Midianite kings, which have just been captured, Zeba and Zalmunna. Verse 18, "Then said he unto Zeba and Zalmunna, What manner of men were they whom you slew at Tabor?" Now, sometime in the past, during the 7 years of the siege that the Midianites had placed upon the children of Israel, they had slain some men at Mount Tabor, and among these men were the brothers of Gideon. And so Gideon is asking them about this now. It seems to be a formal or informal sort of a trial that these kings are going through here. And so Gideon asked them about something in particular, the men that they slew at Tabor. And since they were the brothers of Gideon, no doubt he had a very special interest here, and he had a burning desire for a long time to be able to place the people responsible for this on trial, to ask them face to face, who did you kill, and why did you do it, and how did you do it, and so on. And so he's asking them here, what manner of men were they? And they answered and said, "As thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king." Now back during the time of this oppression of the Midianites, they were forcing the children of Israel to flee into the mountains. And it seemed that some of the family of Gideon fled into this area of Mount Tabor. And as a result of their going up there, they were captured by the Midianites and put to death. And it seems to have been an uncalled for slaughter that was done. And the men that were put to death were, although maybe not rich and powerful and sporting a lot of this world's goods, they seemed to be of a very high caliber. And so the kings described them to Gideon in this way, that as thou art, so were they. They looked like you. They had about the same kind of a countenance that you have. Each one resembled the children of a king, not the children of lowly or base persons, not the children of uneducated or untaught persons, but these seem to be the children of a king. And verse 19, "And he said, They were my brethren, even the sons of my mother." So Gideon tells them right face to face, "You kill my brothers. You kill my own flesh and blood." And so then he further says, "As the Lord liveth, if you had saved them alive, I would not slay you." Now Gideon is going to pronounce the sentence of death upon these kings, and he seems to be doing it not so much from the standpoint of a judge here, but from the standpoint of an avenger. He, as the next of kin of those that were killed by these kings, he is now avenging their blood. And as we know, the law of God did provide for this. This seems to have been the only sin that an individual could take upon himself to avenge without having to go through the Jewish system of judges first. If a person who had taken a life, whether purposely or accidentally, if he could flee and make it to one of the cities of refuge, then the avenger had no power over him as long as he was in the city of refuge. And he stayed there till his trial. And if he were guilty, then he was put to death. If he were innocent, he had to remain in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest, else the avenger could take vengeance on him at any time. So that seems to be what Gideon is doing here. He's taking the position now of an avenger of his brother's blood. And so he said, "If you saved them alive, I would not slay you." This doesn't mean that these kings wouldn't be put to death, but it means that Gideon would not do it here on this occasion. No doubt Gideon would put them on trial, and then the people would decide whether or not they should be slain or left alive. Verse 20, "And he said unto Jether his firstborn, Up and slay them. But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared because he was yet a youth." So here Gideon turns to his son, his firstborn, and he seems to think maybe it would have been appropriate for him to have this job of slaying the king, since he also was one of the kinsmen of the ones that they had killed. But because the boy was so young, he just felt like that it was not something he could do. He was inexperienced, and this was quite an ordeal, quite a task to ask a young person to do who had never been involved in something like this. And so the youth drew not his sword, for he feared. He was afraid to draw his sword and attack these two kings. He was yet a youth. Then, verse 21, Ziba and Zalmunna said, "Rise thou and fall upon us." Now they asked Gideon to do this. You go ahead and do it, Gideon. They didn't want to be given the inglorious death of having a youth to fall upon them, no doubt. They also didn't want someone who was inexperienced and who might make a poor job of it and cause them more suffering. So they wanted Gideon to do this. "Rise thou and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength." And they seem to be talking about the strength of Gideon. You're a man, you're mature, and so you got the strength to do this, and you're not going to falter, and we'll have the least amount of suffering if you'll just go ahead and make a clean job of it. And Gideon arose and slew Ziba and Zalmunna and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks. We're going to have more about this taking of the ornaments in the 26th verse of this chapter, but the margin of some versions read that the ornaments were moons that he took from the camels' necks. And since this goddess of Ashtaroth was a goddess of the moon, this may very well have been some of the objects of their idolatry. And we're going to see that Gideon did not do a good thing with these when he took them, as we get later into the chapter. In the 83rd Psalm, many years later, we have an account given of a desire for the enemies of the church to be punished, and the punishment of these kings is mentioned in that connection. In Psalm 83, verse 11, "Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeb, yea, all their princes as Ziba and as Zalmunna." So this is a symbol to the people of God many years later of destroying the enemies of the church. And so it also becomes a symbol to us today even, of destruction of the enemies of the church of God. God does not intend for the enemies of the church to go unpunished, and he does not intend for the enemies of the church to rule and reign supreme over his people here on this earth in spiritual matters. Verse 22, "Then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, both thou and thy son's son also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian." So after this great victory, this defeat of the army of the Midianites and the death of their kings, the people wanted Gideon to rule over them. He wanted to act like a king over them. Not only him, but also his son. Just let your house take over forever and be our king, be our ruler. Verse 23, "And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Now what Gideon is doing here, number one, is he's showing modesty. He is not taking this great prestige of the office of king, which he could have very well had, it seems. But he also is showing a respect for God, because God is to be the king. God is to be the ruler. And he said that very plainly here, "The Lord shall rule over you." We're going to find that Gideon did go ahead and serve in the office of judge, but he would not take on this office of king. God was to be the king. And so it is in the church today. We do not have a man that rules over the church today. Even in the time of the Apostle Paul, he points this out specifically in 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, beginning with the 13th verse. "Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? I thank God I baptized none of you but Crispus and Gaius, lest any should say that I baptized in mine own name." So we must always remember that we're not following a man, we're not ruled over by a man, but we are ruled over by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. At this time, Gideon was no doubt the greatest person and personality in the nation. He would be the most appropriate of all persons to make the king. But even though it seemed to be a reasonable choice on the part of the people, Gideon had enough wisdom to realize that this was still the position that God was to occupy, and no man should take over this position. In verse 24, "And Gideon said unto them, I would desire a request of you, that you would give me every man the earrings of his prey." for they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. So the men in the army had taken much from their victims in the way of the spoils, and among these spoils were the earrings. It seems that each one of these Ishmaelites had golden earrings, and they had taken these earrings from their bodies, and of course they would add up to quite a bit of value because they were gold. And usually the earrings worn by these people like the Ishmaelites were done as a religious thing. They had some religious symbolism, and so they were the very finest gold to be used as jewelry and as religious jewelry. So Gideon asked for these earrings, and we see here is where is the beginning of a problem now, because his use of them is not going to be for the best purpose. We remember that this is the very way that Aaron started the people on their idolatry back in the book of Exodus. In Exodus 32, beginning with the second verse, "And Aaron said unto them, Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people brake off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and brought them unto Aaron, and he received them at their hand, and fashioned it with a graving tool, after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." So we see here where something that seems to be so harmless in the beginning and on the surface actually turns out to be the downfall of a whole people. And so this is the problem that Gideon has. He wanted the earrings. And verse 25, "And they answered, We will willingly give them. And they spread a garment, and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were about their camels' necks." So we remember when Gideon had slain these two kings, how that he took the gold and the ornaments off of the camels, that was included in this. And as we look at this weight, this 1,700 shekels of gold, which is going to be 1,700 shekels, that figures out to be 680 ounces, according to the best that we can determine as to the weight of a shekel, and that would be 42.5 pounds. 42.5 pounds of gold, which is going to be quite a bit of value. Now we see in verse 27 where Gideon really and truly made a tragic mistake. "And Gideon made an ephod thereof, and put it in his city, even in Ophrah." Now, an ephod was a vestment that the high priest originally wore, and later it became something that was worn by the priest in general. And so we see then where Gideon is making an object of religion here out of these gold earrings, and it would be one of great value, one of it could be held in high esteem by the people, 42 pounds of gold in a vest, but he's going to use it for the wrong purpose. We remember that he did build an altar there after he had torn down the altar of Baal and the groves of Baal. But this altar was not to be used for further sacrifices that we know anything about. By putting this ephod there also as a religious symbol, it would seem that he is setting up another place to worship God besides Shiloh. Shiloh was the place that was to be the center of worship for the nation. Shiloh was where the ark was. Shiloh was where the high priest had his function. But because these tribes were each so independent, we read very little of Shiloh and the ark in the book of Judges. Each tribe seemed to rival the others by providing for their own worship at home. And this is not the way God intended for it to be. God wanted them to worship at the place where his name was, and that's where the ark was, at Shiloh. But Gideon made this ephod of this 42.5 pounds of gold, and he put it in his city, even in Ophrah. Ophrah, of course, is there in Manasseh. "And all Israel went thither a-whoring after it." Now, Israel looked upon it as a thing to be worshipped, a thing to be used as worship, and they used this thing in the place of the true vestment of the high priest located at Shiloh. It became a rival service to the service God intended for them to follow, and consequently it was then an addition to the church of God. It was a thing to cause division among the people of God, and it's counted here as something that they went whoring after. That is, they were turning to another god when they turned to something different. Anytime we use something different than what God has given us, we're then whoring after that. We're going after another god. We're being unfaithful to our husband, and we are breaking the covenant that we have with God. And that's what these people did. They made a very tragic mistake here. God's people cannot substitute or duplicate the things He has intended for them to use as worship to Him without actually being in error. This is the way that we leave God. This is the way that we break the covenant with God. God does not want a duplication of what He's given us. He does not want some kind of a substitute for what He's given us. He wants us to follow the genuine thing, the original article, as it's intended for His people to follow. And this is true in all manner of worship. In this particular case, it had to do with this ephod, and no doubt it was connected with the altar there. And they set up their own little rival worship, and they might have even appealed to it for guidance rather than going to the high priest for guidance. And so this would truly be a thing that God would look upon with great disfavor, and He calls it here in the very true terms an act of whoring after it. And He further says, which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house. So it matters not how great Gideon was, how wise he was, how good a judgment he had. Here he made a terrible error, and this thing was a snare to him and a snare to his family, a snare to him and to his house. And this means that then Gideon was hampered in being able to do the things that he should have done to please God. Gideon was placed into a position of being unable to properly serve God. He was trapped. He was snared by this idolatry, by this thing that the people went whoring after. And any time we put something in the place of what God has given us, we substitute some other kind of worship to God, it's a trap to us. It snares us. It holds us back. We lose our ability to freely do the things that God would have us to do in the way God wants us to. And let us not be hampered then by some kind of a trap or a snare like Gideon found himself to be by the building up of this ephod that God did not authorize. However, we find that regardless, God did allow them to have a 40-year period of quietness here. Verse 28, thus was Midian subdued before the children of Israel, so that they lifted up their heads no more. And the country was in quietness for 40 years in the days of Gideon. So Gideon, by his great acts here, gave them 40 years of peace and quietness, 40 years of freedom from the oppression that people like the Midianites had put upon them. And so we see then that the times of Israel are reckoned by the 40s. For example, Othniel judged for 40 years, Ehud judged for 80 years, which would be 240s, Deborah and Barak 40, and now Gideon 40. So that Providence so ordered it to bring in mind, no doubt, the 40 years of their wandering in the wilderness. And God says, 40 years long was I grieved with this generation. We find in the case of Ezekiel, when he had portrayed the city of Jerusalem on a tile, which was symbolic of their destruction. In the sixth verse he says, and when thou hast accomplished them, lie again on thy right side, and thou shalt bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have appointed thee each day for a year. So here we again read about this 40-year period, which is known as the time of the iniquity of the house of Judah. And so 40 is a symbolic age for the people of God. Even after these judges that we're reading about now, after Gideon, we find that Eli ruled 40 years. Samuel and Saul also were for 40 years. David 40 years, and Solomon 40 years. So 40 years is a unit of time that God uses to show an age. It seems to be the period of time that one generation moves from a time of prominence and the taking the authority for a people till another generation has begun to take over. And when God's people are filled with sin and iniquity, then a 40-year period is kind of a purging time. The older ones have moved on, they're no longer in prominence, and the new, younger generation now has taken over, and hopefully they will do things in a better way. They will have more respect for the things of God, or maybe they can be taught where the others couldn't be taught. They don't have as hard a heart as the others had, and then a new beginning can be had. We see here how God is a very benevolent and good God. Even in the time of their quietness and their prosperity, they went a-whoring after the other gods. They went a-whoring after this thing that Gideon had created, this ephod that was not intended to be. And so, even when the people are so disobedient, God is still long-suffering. God is still merciful. God still allows them to have a time of quietness. And had they been wise at this time, they would have gotten closer to God instead of getting further away from Him. Because by getting further away from Him, they're only bringing about another time of downfall. And we today must also realize that even though we may seem to be in a period of quietness, even though God has given us all manner of goodness and grace and mercy, let us get closer to God rather than further away from Him, because to draw away from Him will only bring about our downfall. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.